welcome to another episode of Living an Ultra Life. And this week we have a repeat guest. This gal is doing some amazing things, fresh off a second place finish in Pinhoti. It is quite an honor to welcome back Miss Nell Fox. You ready to go for a little run?
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
All right. Okay. No 100 miles this time. Okay.
No, thank you.
Well, Nell, I guess it's been about two, almost 3 years since you've been on, right?
Yeah, I think about two, because we recapped after Bull Run.
Okay. So catch us up on Nell Fox, what you're doing now, Magnum Opus Coaching. That was a mouthful. I almost didn't get that up. And just where you've gone in the last couple of years.
Yep. So Magnum Opus Coaching is my fitness and wellness, put the primary focus on developing runners of all levels and abilities in their running journey, and just supporting a practice that is not only rewarding but also sustainable, always with health in mind first and then performance second. And that has grown. I have been able to get some of my closer friends onto the team and training partners, particularly women, and really seen their trail running, ultra running experience just blossom. And it's just such a privilege to be a part of the journey alongside them and then the other runners that I do support on trail and on road. I have worked on gathering more certifications in the strength and conditioning, the female physiology, pelvic floor health, all of those kinds of things, menopausal women, as well as attending conferences with fellow endurance coaches all over the world, getting to rub elbows with Jason Koop and people like that, and listening to them talk and just taking it all in. This past summer, I went to Mont Blanc. I went to Chamonix and I did a 7-day, it was 6 days of running, 7 days on trail. I did the trail Mont Blanc on my own. So it was about 106 miles and around 40,000 feet of climbing.
Wow.
And it was just the best thing that I've ever done. I met so many people, you know, along the way that were both international and also local. One of the women that I met, she actually was already registered for the Grindstone 50K, and I'm on the operations team for that race. And so I got to see her again this fall at the race. I was like, oh my gosh, look, we're stateside. really, really
awesome.
Yeah. And so just amazing.
You've added a couple. Now, have you added a couple coaches in the last year or so?
Yes. Yeah, so I have my coach, Rachel Spaulding, and she works. Some of my friends in particular, it can be very difficult to separate friend and coach. And so she's been a really great asset to developing them, and specifically some trail running athletes as well with me. And then I have Coach Tyler Miller, who is more of a roadie. He's dipped his toes into trail and just not ready to go there yet, which is okay. But he's wonderful, great analytical mind, but also a great community engager, locally in person and things like that. And he also, you know, is on Instagram as well and does a good job sharing his journey.
Awesome.
But there is some interest from other people to join the coaching world with me. It's just a matter of having the time to develop them. And, you know, also the patience that growing a coaching practice is not something that just happens overnight. You don't just say, hey, I'm a coach, and people come. One of the biggest parts of my business and how it's grown is by doing, not necessarily being the best, but living and breathing what I promote, being out in the world, being visible, either doing my thing or supporting my runners or training them and sharing a little bit about the training process. So it is one of those professions that sounds really cushy on paper, but you are going to be working 60 or 70 hour weeks.
Yeah.
And sometimes it feels like work and sometimes it feels really fun. But Pinhoti 100 was both a day at the office and, you know, something that I pursue because I find it rewarding. I'm not going to say that it was fun. We'll talk a little bit more about that.
No kidding.
This 100 miler was not fun for me, but I needed it more than I
Yeah.
probably needed anything else in my life. So.
And you've been rocking some of these 100 milers, 'cause was it 2 years ago at Grindstone? Did you finish fourth, right?
I think it was 2021,
Okay.
that I ran Grindstone and I finished fourth. That was my first one. And I, in the process, I still had some health issues, and thankfully many of those health issues are resolved. I think I have some things right now that I'm working on, but they're not as severe as they've been in the past, for which I'm very grateful. But that particular race brought on some stomach issues that festered after the race as a result of pretty severe nausea that prevented me from being able to eat the final 30 miles of the race. And then anytime I ate something after the race, I just had so much pain. So
Wow.
it took a long time for me. I wanted to focus on healing my digestive system, and managing that before I came back to the 100 mile distance. And so last year I was supposed to do Rim to River in 2023, but I went after a dapsone treatment for Lyme disease to see if I could just eradicate any residual biofilms from that particular chronic infection that I'd had. And that just completely wiped me. I had
Wow.
like low red blood cell counts, fainted in the lab draw facility.
Gosh.
I was completely depleted, and then it was a rebuild all the way up to Bull Run. And that was a training cycle that nothing really felt good, but I just did it anyway. And then in my build to Rim to River, I felt amazing. I've never felt so good in my life. I felt strong. I was setting PRs in the 5K, which is like nuts when you're
Right.
training 100 mile race. And I was just on top of the world, and I logged one of the fastest times recorded on that course. And
Yeah, I remember seeing you at the start line at Rimmed River last year and thinking, oh my gosh, I mean, because you looked fitter than I've ever seen you. I've seen you at a bunch of different races, but I am telling you, last year at Rimmed River, you looked like you were about ready to just storm off. I was like, this could be a really good year by Nell here. And then you surprised the world. You finished second, right? Second woman
Yeah, I was second woman.
in top 10 overall, weren't you?
That was an interesting race, and I don't want to delve really too much into it, but I did lead the race for the first 37, and there was just so much joy that surrounded that race, and I had no stomach issues. I
Wow.
executed that race. I don't believe I could have executed that race any better with the circumstances that were before me, but I was so happy with how that race went. And I was ready to kind of put the 100 mile distance aside just to focus on my children and all of the things that were growing in their worlds, as they, develop into the people that they are. You know,
Yeah.
100 mile training is a huge time demand, and I was being very creative with how I was getting my training runs in. Like, I would basically drop my kids off at mountain biking, and it was luckily at a place where I could run trail, and I'd have about 90 minutes to get as many miles as I possibly could while they were doing their mountain biking, and then I would meet them back. And then, I'd take one to gymnastics, and I would get like an 8 mile run while she was doing that, and just like really trying to be super creative about the pockets of time I had available while also making sure I was getting good sleep while running a business, getting my kids up. Sometimes I would get a go for a run, come back to wake my kids up, go run some more, make sure my kids are coming downstairs, go back and run the last bit, and then, make sure they've eaten and put them on the bus. So
I
there
feel
was
like we should nickname you Wonder Woman, but
oh.
Tinkernell just works so much better. So, wow. I mean, you're describing what your life, training for a 100 miler, and I'm thinking, I'm getting tired just listening to this schedule. That's incredible.
Well, and I'll be honest, I don't think I realized just how exhausted I was doing what I was doing with no help until this year.
That's amazing. That is so incredible. So now, where are you with the Lyme disease? Is it at bay for now, or what's going on?
I think my immune system is sensitive. I think I have a very strong response to stress in my environment. Is Lyme active? No. Do I
Okay.
have basically permanent joint damage? I mean, anytime someone looks at an x-ray of my joints, they're like, oh yeah, you have arthritis. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I know that. But I do it anyway, I run anyway, and I should do more mobility. But my bones are strong, my tissues are strong, I'm recovering decently. I was on antibiotics for 270 days out of 1 year. And that was in 2017. And so my digestive tract is, my gut microbiome is permanently damaged from
Wow.
that. And so all I can do right now is focus on adding healing things to my routine to support improved function. And that's something I feel really passionate about with my runners too. Like if they're coming to me talking about persistent nausea or food sense or potentially like gastric pain or bloating, it's like we really need to take a look under the hood and get you the tests and pushing them towards individuals. I'm working on getting my functional diagnostic nutrition certification so that I can order
Oh,
these
wow.
tests for my athletes.
Well, that is awesome. I didn't realize you were doing that. That's totally cool.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's for me. We cannot sacrifice our health in the pursuit of performance. If we work with the body, it will give us everything we want it to. But if you force things along and you ignore, then that's when things start to really bubble up and shut you down. So I'm hopeful that this is, that 2026 is the year that I can complete this program. It is extremely technical, but that's because the certification allows for you to order tests that examine your gut microbiome and the inflammation in your body. So all of that to say, where am I with Lyme? I feel like I'm in a pretty good place. I
Awesome.
have not been eating the way I would like to this past year, and because of that, I do think I am dealing with some inflammation that I wasn't dealing with at REM, but all in all, my body is strong and healthy, and I can't certainly complain about that.
Amazing. So we've talked about and referred to the year. You've had a year from HE double hockey sticks, quite frankly.
It's been the worst year of my life.
I have watched it now, and I'm from afar. I'm like, man, I'm just gonna keep on praying for now because you've had a year, girl. Can you talk a little bit about some of the things that have been trying to just pull Nell out of the game?
It's very difficult to share because I have to be very careful about what could legally be used against me.
Right.
But for the entirety of my children's life until this point, I have been the primary everything. I delivered my second child by myself because someone didn't want to be there, ultimately, and he could have. I went through my dad's death from cancer alone. I raised both of my children went from the time that they were babies. Basically, without any help except for maybe every other weekend and some holidays. And I was always happy to do that because of my commitment to our family. But over time, I felt like I was being isolated. I wasn't able to run the way I felt like I should have a right to do. I wasn't able to have a social life around that. I felt very much controlled and coerced into a life that I didn't want for myself. And over time, it became domestically abusive, at times physically, and most certainly emotionally. And I left that relationship, and I would call it a life-saving divorce. But what people don't prepare you for is what's called post-separation abuse. And it has been one thing after another. And finally, last year, after some false allegations were made about my whereabouts, my phone had died at a football game, and I was suddenly a missing person. And then, because of that, my children were withheld from me. And I just reached a point of I cannot deal with this anymore. I can't keep living my life wondering when the next shoe is going to drop. And I filed a motion to relocate back home. My family wanted me home. And I wanted to go home no matter what it cost me. Maybe it was going to cost me my business, but I wanted to go home and I wanted to be able to take our children with me. And that created a cascade of counter moves that were egregious and false and without evidence. And the legal system didn't hear evidence for 6 months. Following those allegations, they wouldn't hear them. They refused to
So
hear them.
you couldn't get a hearing on anything.
I could get a hearing, but at those here and a hearing was set, but I couldn't see my children without a supervisor.
Wow.
And
So you could not, you didn't have the girls for 6 months.
they were taken from me. I went home for Thanksgiving because it wasn't my year to have them. And I went home for Thanksgiving, and that's when all of this blew up. And I watched my children on the ring, the inside ring, come into my home and just take all of their stuff from my home. I couldn't talk to them. I couldn't talk to them on the ring without a soup, because like it does give you those capabilities. I couldn't even talk to them as they took things out of my home. And I was denied access to them. I could not see them for over a month. And it wasn't until the hearing that their guardian ad litem was like, "These children haven't seen their mother in a month.
Wow.
They need to see their mother." And it's right before Christmas. It was supposed to be my Christmas with the children, and my aunt and uncle, who live locally, were like, "We will supervise so that she can be with her children on Christmas." And I went and have overnights because those were approved, and it was still denied. And so I got to spend 8 hours with my children on Christmas by the grace of God. One of my best friends, who is not a Christian, doesn't celebrate Christmas, hosted us at her home so that I could see my children. And the
Wow.
degree of cruelty that I faced and that the legal system permitted opened my eyes to a whole underworld in the family law system, not just locally, but nationwide.
Wow.
There are books on women who have, in the initial stories, taken their life because they have been permanently separated from their children due to a coercive relationship where the father's hatred towards the mother far exceeds the love that they have for their children. And so
This
that
is
was.
tough stuff, man. I mean, this is real life, really tough stuff that I just can't even imagine the emotions while you're going through this, and
Right.
then
So,
just the frustration of not being heard.
no one heard my story at the end of the day. It was all, I guess you could say I was basically framed. And unfortunately, my legal representation lacked the teeth needed to shred the web that was woven. The first thing that happened, of course, I couldn't return to work. I was so emotionally distraught by what had happened that I, had to message all of my clients and say, "I've got to table all of this." And then I was registered for Hellgate, and I thought I could toe the line, and I got to the start, and I just felt like I had been hit by a bus. And I withdrew, and Horton was like, "Can you just try?" And I just was like in tears because I just couldn't. And went back to the cabin, slept a little bit, woke up, went to Bear Wallow, saw my friends compete, went to the finish line, and it felt good to be around people, but like my world was just falling apart. And I was registered for Boston, and one of my longest standing clients was finally getting to go after years of building towards this. She was in the local news for it. And I was forbidden from going or taking the girls with me, my children with me.
What, you
So
were forbidden to go to Boston?
I was forbidden. If I wanted to have that weekend with my kids, I was not allowed to take them.
Oh my.
So the implications from both a race level and a work level, it was this severely affected my business that I had worked so hard to grow. And I mean, I'm showing up to work every day. There were some weeks where I was getting some miles and I would start to kind of feel like myself again, and then I would just fall apart again. And eventually, like by the end of January, we actually had another hearing, and that judge, I think, saw the situation for what it was and lifted all supervision
Oh,
and got
wow.
a regular schedule and eradicated all of these ridiculous requests that were being made on me. But unfortunately, he never heard our case again. Yeah,
So you
the
got a
way
good judge in one time, huh?
Yeah, we had a judge at the beginning that I'd had experienced before, and he needed to retire, and he was on his way out. And then we had this other judge that was great, but we were due to have a trial, and at the end of February, and both attorneys said, we're not ready to have a trial, and the next available date for trial was the beginning of June.
Wow.
So, again, just kind of perpetuating this injustice and heartbreak and damage that was occurring just across the board, and allowed for additional drama and, like little kicks to the side and things like that to occur that could be used then in the final trial, which was a trial that was presided by a judge on his very first day.
Wait a second. Wait. A judge presided on his very first day at work.
Yes.
Our legal system's awesome, isn't it?
It's broken.
Wow.
It's totally broken. But all, 35,000 dollars later,
Wow.
the expense of this, my crime here being that I wanted to put space between someone who only wants to see me fail, who only wants to see me suffer and have nothing. And so I put my head down because I knew I had to protect something. I had to protect myself, and I had my friends supporting me and sending me messages every day and running with me through the tears and having me over for dinner because I didn't know what to do with myself. I was the woman doing it all.
I was going to say, you're used to having these two incredible young ladies that are relying on mom to do their everything, and now they're jerked away from you. And I mean, do
My
you,
entire routine changed
yeah.
the
I mean,
way
you
things.
went from having them all the time to what, every other weekend?
Pretty much.
Wow.
And
And so I have to ask, how are the girls doing?
I think they're doing all right. There are questions about that I have regarding the long-term implications of the
Right.
decision made, but it's a decision made, and until their eyes are open, and that's the thing is, children are highly impressionable. I mean, they can formulate their own opinions, but those opinions are always going to be influenced by the adults in their life. And
So are
so,
they still in the same schools that they were
oh
going to?
yeah.
Okay.
And that's the thing is the proximity. The proximity is a big problem for me. It always has been. I dealt with a lot of stalking behaviors, intimidation tactics that made it difficult for me to feel safe. And that happened again this fall. Just like calling the police to my house and just really trying to humiliate me.
Wow.
And I'm so done with that, and it's just
Yeah.
really sad, honestly. But I was committed to going to this Mont Blanc adventure. I was going to do that for myself. Not only to do something I've always wanted to do running wise, but also to see where the potential could be for me to support other people who either wanted to go do the trail, at leisure or on their own terms, or if they wanted to do it through UTMB or similar, and
Yeah.
just really prepare them for that experience So there are so many. It was obviously a multifaceted trip in that regard, but you can't just show up and run 106 miles and do a 3,000 foot climb in 3 miles. You can't just do that. You have to train.
Yeah, no kidding. And
So
I mean, it's not exactly at low altitude. It's not Virginia Mountains, is it?
yeah, no, it's not the highest I've ever been. It's certainly not never summer, but
Right.
it's definitely at altitude. And so that process of specifically training for that really began in May, also with the back of my mind being because I had withdrawn from Boston, which was supposed to be my A goal. I dropped into a local half marathon that a lot of my clients were doing and happened to win it, which was just
No
like
way.
this
That's
beautiful.
awesome.
It was just this beautiful gift that just dropped into my lap, like, oh my gosh, something good happened to me.
Yeah,
It was
that's
like
awesome.
one of my clients is a pastor and he testified for me. And I just looked at him, I was like, oh my gosh, looks something good happened to me. And
Yeah.
like, it's just, running is one of those things that has just given me gift after gift after gift. And it was one of those things that I was just like unwilling to let be also taken from me, my dignity, my children. The week before Pinhoti, I actually had to appear in court because there is now the matter of child support. And
Wait,
so
wait a second. Are you saying that he wants you to pay him?
yes,
Nice. I
not
love
only
this guy
that,
more and more.
I know. Well, not only that, he also wants access to my business books. So, yeah, and legally he can request that because I am a business owner.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
I know that was the Monday before Pinhoti, and I
So
just,
you go off to Pinhoti after this hearing?
yeah, I mean, I
Oh my
didn't have
gosh.
any ability to adjust the date.
Oh wow.
I just I'm told at this point.
You are gritty, man. I'm telling you, if I had had that hearing the week before going off to Pinhoti, I'd have been curled in a ball, man. And you go down to Pinhoti and absolutely crushed the race.
Well, it was amazing because, preparing for this race, I did some 50Ks that were races. I did Grindstone, I did West Virginia Trilogy. And, my goal is always to run with joy, but like, let's be real. This year has not been joyful for me. And so
Yeah.
it's like, okay, we're doing this because it needs to be done. And when the pockets of joy come, we're going to notice them, we're going to celebrate them. But sometimes there just isn't joy.
Yeah.
But sometimes in the pursuit of sticking with it, you get something that means something even more. And
Yeah.
so, I did those races, one for the tune-up component and one to keep me accountable to the long runs, the bread and butter, because finding the will to train when your will is pretty much shot, that was really good for me. But my crew in particular are people who have been with me pretty much since the beginning of this horrible year. They have
Wow.
seen me suffer. They have listened to me cry and wail and deliberate, and so just having them there, I prepped them. I said, this race, I have to protect this race. The reason I'm doing this race is because it's mine.
No.
And I can't let this be taken from me too. And so, yeah, I mean, they were all out there, and I mean, we can talk about the race, of course, but I mean,
So
there were.
I want to pull a nugget out of the race because I did not. You in one of your posts, you said that your brother sprinkled your dad's ashes on one of the peaks at Pinhoti.
Yeah, Bald Rock.
How did that? There are you. You're not from Alabama, are you?
Oh, yes, I am.
Are
I
you a Bama girl? I did not realize you were a Bama girl. I
am.
thought you were a Virginia girl.
No, I'm from Alabama. I lived there for the first 22 years of my life,
Oh
and
my gosh, I completely forgot that because I'm sitting there going, how did their dad's ashes end up in Alabama? Okay, now I know. Sorry.
my dad used to take us camping at Cheaha, and
No.
I have a distinctive memory of like rolling my pink Barbie suitcase down the single track to set up camp. And, we had tomato soup. And then, in the morning, my dad was like, "Oh, look, there's some raccoon tracks in the camp." Just like, I don't even know if that was true, but I remember like going to, it was probably the over, it may have been Blue Rock or Bald Rock, or it might have been the overlook at the top of Blue Hell, but I remember him kind of like pushing me close to the edge, and I was so scared, but he held on to me, but just like, the magnitude and the depth of these cliffs, right? And so after my dad died, my brother took some of his ashes and spread them there because my brother, it was my bro older brother and I that went camping. And he spread some of them there. So my dad loved the outdoors. He loved to backpack. He used to take us to Ruffner Mountain and we would play in the fairy tree, which was hollow on the inside. All of the, just these really whimsical, and my dad loved fantasy world and Lord of the Rings and just whimsy, right? And
That's
so
awesome.
yeah, so
So you
that.
got to go down Run Pinhoti and just amazing. I am sure, the just memories of your dad had to just come flooding back in, all those happy memories.
Right. And it definitely was special to do that. It's something I've always wanted to do. So I was really grateful that I did get to do it. And that is one of the things that pulled me out of one of the low points of my race, the lowest point of my
Okay.
race.
So let's kind of jump into the race a little bit because I mean you really did amazing. So the start of the race, did you have like any fantasy that you were going to be running in the top kind of pack or
Oh, I,
what
yeah,
was going through your head?
undoubtedly. I looked at the ultras lineup. I saw some strong women on there, and I was not seated. I was like seated eighth or ninth or something, and I was like, no, I'm racing for the win. This is my day.
So you're lined up at the start, and your mindset has now shifted to I'm winning this daggone thing.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, and I wanted to run rim, but it was not the day for it. But yeah, so I lined up. I knew that the course turned into single track very quickly, so I knew I needed to make a strong move, take it out like a cross country meet, and then be able to be in a good position to avoid the conga line that first 7 miles of the race in the dark.
That's awesome. So did you accomplish that right from the bat? Did you get out in front of the conga line?
Yes, I would say I probably was like around 12th to 15th in
Okay.
line, but the line was already starting to spread and only a few people passed me in that section, and that was fine, but the big concern was would I be passing like 50 people if I didn't.
Right. So you got out in front of the kind of beginning pack and were able to run pretty free, it seems like.
Yeah, I had good visibility of the trail with my headlamp and was just trying to settle into that all day pace. But it's that first 7 miles, and there's just a lot of energy all around, so you kind of find yourself running a little bit faster than you like. So just continuing to dial back. So yeah.
So at what point, was it around mile 20-ish where you kind of slid back into that kind of fit yourself into that, was it like 8th to 12th female in that point?
I was never lower than third place woman.
Oh, really? I did not realize that. Okay. So you were always up in the top three women.
Yeah, I led, I want to say maybe the first 3 miles of the race, and
Okay.
then one female charged ahead and I just let her go. And then another female stayed in the con, it was a pack maybe, aid station one, and then she ran through aid station one. I got rid of my waist belt and then picked up my pack there. So just like a 15 to 20 second turnaround at that aid
Okay.
station, and then charged on. And then I didn't see either of them again. I saw the woman that was in first place at mile 66 or
Okay.
67, and then the other woman I didn't see again until about mile 97, 98.
Okay. Who was your crew for this one, Nell? Because so one of the things I love watching as a ultra runner and somebody who goes solo a lot is the crew and the way that the crew has their stuff together when you're coming in. Your aid station stops were quick. It looked like a pit stop. Who was your crew?
So I had Zach from VHTRC, and I had Celia from Bridgewater, and then I had Corey from Williamsburg. And more or less, they designated between the three of them who was going to be in my face, and that was Celia, who was
Okay.
going to do my pack and make sure it was repack because I was exchanging packs, and that was Celia. Corey assisted Celia, and Zach, when I came into all of the aid stations, was getting the footage.
Okay. And now
So,
who had the massage gun? Because I know that, at some point the massage gun came out, because that looked like a like watching a NASCAR pit crew changing tires. It was almost hilarious. I don't know if you've seen any of that footage, but
yeah.
it's awesome. Who was that?
I had the massage gun. I requested the massage gun at mile 19 because I was feeling a lot of tightness in my posterior chain. That was kind of
Okay.
bizarre. It was a 10-hour drive down to Alabama. I think I need to do a little more stretching on the anterior chain, just stretching out the hip flexors and such, but it is what it is. I mean, I would say it was probably Zach or Celia going after my hamstrings in
Okay.
particular. So,
That's awesome.
but in time, they ended up relinquishing the gun to me, and I just went
Okay.
after my points while, Celia was lifting my arm up and going, reapplying deodorant or putting on Body Glide. Like that was a mile 43 thing. And then, Corey would, extend a piece of kebab out to me for me to take a bite of here and there. So,
Incredible crew. Now, did you train? Because I know that you also, part of your coaching thing is helping people prepare for races. Did you coach your crew, or where did this come from?
Corey had paced me before at Rim.
Okay.
And actually, Corey and I had run together some at Grindstone. So he's been at all of my 100-mile races.
Okay.
But I had a whole document and I had sh shared it with them in advance. I had asked them in advance, what questions do you have? What do you want to know? And then I started answering those questions and plugging specific things into the document. I used UltraPacer and took copy paste of specific things that I wanted at each aid station so they knew exactly what I wanted, when I wanted it. And the night before the race, because Corey didn't arrive until 90 seconds before the start of the race.
Wow. Oh my
I know.
gosh.
His daughter had a senior night for band. And
Okay.
so he drove all night long.
Oh
And
my gosh.
by the grace of God, made it by the start, which was amazing.
Wow.
But anyway, so the night before, I went through the whole document with Zach and Cor Zach and Celia, and I showed them my whole. I got this amazing new North Face box, and I got like the extra large one,
Okay.
and it's amazing, and it collapses when it's empty.
No way.
Yeah, it's so awesome. It was the best $140 I've ever spent. I actually saw someone the week before at Rim to River with one, and I was like, I am going to use the 20% off discount and reapply that discount to second day shipping or next day shipping so that I have this here for my race.
That's awesome. That is
And
so
so
awesome. I'm taking notes. I just
I know.
wrote that down. I was like, wait a second. I've
It's
never heard of that one.
amazing. It's got like all of these mesh pockets on the sides. It's got like zipper pockets on the top part, but I just showed them where everything was. Everything was in bags with Ziploc bags with permanent marker, so they
That's
knew,
awesome.
and it was all in order of when they would need it. I went through my first aid bag, all of my extra clothes, when I would want what, when. So they lived, there was pretty much no need for them to guess on anything.
That's awesome. Now, let me ask you a question, because this is really important now.
Okay.
Why is this important as a runner and as a coach that you provide this for your crew?
Because if your crew is trying to figure out what you need at the aid station as you're coming in, they're going to be scrambling. If they don't know where your stuff is, you're going to lose so much time with them trying to find your stuff for you. Not only that, but like the mantras and things, like what fuels you, what moves you forward. If you put all of that stuff in there, when you have a problem, they'll say, slap a gel on it, or you are the storm. Like
Yep.
whatever it is, all of those kinds of challenges, whatever that you can anticipate being a need during your race, if you can write that out, then your crew's going to be able to take on whatever needs you have on the fly with a lot more ease because they're not also scrambling in every other capacity as well.
Awesome. Awesome. See, and that is a huge, huge pro tip right there that you can only get from the infamous Nell Fox.
Now, I'm sure there are others that haven't figured out in that way too, but the more explicit that you can be, I mean, also you want to be concise. You don't want to write like a 25-page essay on how to
Yep.
be a good crew because that's too
Or
much information.
they won't read it. Exactly.
And
Yeah.
that's the other thing, actually having that meeting with them, because people will provide a document and then their crews don't read it. No. Sit down. Don't just, I mean, it's like a professor sending an assignment. Don't trust that the students are actually going to read it.
Yeah,
Go
that's
through
awesome.
it with them, or in that instance, test them. I'm not going to
Yeah.
like through a test.
Yeah.
But.
Well, maybe next time. Maybe when you do Mont Blanc, you'll have to test the crew. What do you think?
That would definitely probably produce a little anxiety on that. On their part, but that's okay.
That's all right. That's awesome.
And even printing all of the directions, the printable directions, and having them out, because there were some components of this race that are a little different with like odd and even aid station. So if you have an
Okay.
odd number bib, you can go to this aid station. If you have an even
Oh,
number,
wow.
you can go to this one. And the directions actually were provided if you want to go. If you went to an odd station, the directions to get to the next aid station where you're able to crew. So,
Wow.
yeah, so like little things like that, which means you've got to read,
Yeah.
right? I
You mean you actually read the race brief?
know I went to the race meeting and like, I don't know, I guess I'm just used to the way we do it in Virginia. I mean, it's a whole thing and it's like it's a ritual and it feels
Yes.
amazing. At least in this area, maybe not just
Yep.
Virginia, this area. And there they were like so casual. They were like, oh, and by the way, the course markings are blue. I
That's
was like,
awesome.
okay, well, so glad that we've got that information out.
Said you did not come from the Horton School of Rail Marking, did you?
No, but I will say the course was wonderfully well marked. There's some races I go to and I'm like, I don't even know if I'm on the right trail, and that's really funny.
Yeah, I've been there. Those are called bonus miles. Those are the best.
Oh, no, I don't like those at all.
Well, that's because you're not, mid to the back of the pack like me. See, mid to back of the pack, we just go, look, bonus miles. This is awesome.
No, because then that means you're on your feet even more.
Yeah, I know.
That's a good mindset.
Yep.
But yeah, so my crew was amazing. I really
Yeah. And it was a special race. I mean, you did tremendous. When did you realize that, that you could move up and possibly win this thing?
So first I want to say, one more thing kind of from earlier in the race. I hit my first low point in that 28 to 30 mile mark, and I was just like, these miles are going by so slowly. I feel weak. I'm eating on my timer. I don't quite understand what's happening. And I called Corey up and I was like, I'm having a r and thankfully I had reception. I was like, I'm not feeling good right now. I feel really tired and it feels like a really long way to go. And he, just encouraged me to keep on going. He, after the fact, shared that he had a sense that I was going to try to drop,
Okay.
but I didn't. And during that time, because it was a really long time, it was from mile 19 to mile 43 that I couldn't
Oh,
see my
wow. You went 19 to 43 with no crew.
no crew. Yeah. And I think this was a race that was made by my crew. My crew, I couldn't have done it without them. Absolutely not. Team sport all the way. During that time, they allocated, they were back at the cabin that I'd rented, and they took a 15-minute powwow to put their heads together to determine what was needed in order to breathe life back into my race.
Okay.
And during that time, I approached the biggest climb of the race, which takes you to Bald Rock and the highest point in the state of Alabama, and that aid station. And I had hoped one of my friends that lived more locally would be there with the van. And I was like, if he's there, I'll just drop. Well,
Okay.
he wasn't there.
Good.
Because I felt kind of hopeless. Like, these girls were so far ahead of me. I didn't know how far ahead of me, but I was like really discouraged in the racing process at that time. And it was around this time that I was like, well, but if I don't even make it to Bald Rock, I don't get to run with my dad.
There you go, motivation.
And so I knocked back. I first of all, I took caffeine, which I had been
Okay.
waiting until 30 miles to do. And that's really important because when I get grumpy, it's because I need caffeine.
Okay, that's awesome. Wow.
Learning.
There's a tip for future Nail Fox crew.
Yes, and I whipped out my poles, and it was a 3 mile climb, about 1,200, 1,400 feet. Nothing. That's nothing for
Yep.
Virginians. Okay. And so I hammered that down. I did fall on that section and got bloody, but it was fine. And then I got to Bald Rock and I was running on the boardwalk, and then I hit Blue Hell, and there were photographers everywhere, and I just felt like a clumsy idiot coming down this. I mean, it is like
Says
boulder.
this is coming from the girl who looks like she dances when she's running through boulder fields. Yes, you. I'm sure.
It was so, I mean, and I had run this part before, like when I was trying to get a little bit familiar with the course earlier in the training block. And so I knew what was coming, but I was just like, just get down this. But on the other side of that descent, Blue Hell, the trail evens out, and then you enter Cheaha Lake, and that's where my crew was. And once I got to the aid station, like, everyone started singing happy birthday
That
for
is
me.
so awesome. That is
Yeah,
so awesome.
my birthday was the day before the race, so
How cool.
they were wearing birthday hats and light up glasses and fun things. And so they just breathed life back into me there, fixed my glitter, and then Corey ran about 2.5 miles on the road with me before hitting the trail, and then I would see them again at mile 55. And
Awesome.
that's when the race began
That is
for me.
so awesome. So now you gotta tell me the magical superpower of glitter, 'cause I'm seeing it everywhere now. You women are rocking
It is
it.
so fun. There's glow in the dark glitter. You can do glitter tattoos. You can mix glitter colors. You can put it on your deltoids. You can put it on your cheeks. You can reapply it. You can put it in your hair if you want to.
My gosh.
But it's just fun. And just like, again, in this pursuit of finishing something that I had started and I had registered for before my world blew up,
Yeah.
whatever little bit of joy I could infuse and have and call upon was worth its weight in gold.
Yeah, no
And
kidding.
the time it took to put it on, right? Because
Right.
this place that ultimately came down to seconds.
Oh my gosh.
So basically, I got to mile 55, approached Adam's Gap, and it was a rock garden. I was like, I'm the queen of this. I can
Yep.
run this. And I charged into that aid station. My calf was screaming, my right calf, which was kind of bizarre. But one of my friends from Alabama was a massage therapist, and he followed me over to my chair. My crew took care of me. We were preparing for nighttime because I was chasing the sunset at that point.
Okay.
And he's massaging my calf, and they're taking my shirt off and they're putting another shirt on, and I just looked like this hot mess, like everything was lopsided, you know. I took the time to give all of my crew hugs there, and turned to Corey. Last year I had totally had a meltdown on him at like mile 87. My watch had died. We were on forever trails. I was tired and not making any progress, it felt like. So I told him, I was like, all right, Corey, I'm going to try not to yell at you. And he said, okay. And off we went. So,
Awesome. That is so awesome.
and he was originally not supposed to pace me until mile 87 to the end. And
Okay.
Celia was going to pace me from mile 70 to 87. But one thing I said on the phone when I was with Corey was, I'm going to need pacers sooner,
Okay.
which was a huge lift for my crew, because Zach had been sick with a lung infection of some kind, and so he couldn't run. So it was going to be between Corey and Celia. Celia just
Okay.
having 100 miles a little over a month ago, and Corey having returning from an injury, like, oh, not great. But Corey and I ran off literally into the sunset, and it was just like imagine running the Highland Sky. Just kind of gave those vibes, but the sun was
Cool.
setting all around us and it was like gorgeous. And like, just we didn't even try to take a picture of it because it was just like no photo was going to do it justice. And we got to the next aid station at mile 60, and maybe it was actually closer to mile 62, 61 or 62. We were picking people off. We were just,
That's
and we were
awesome.
like, we had heard that first and second were looking rough. And one of them was looking worse than the other. And I was like, well, I am an experienced ultra runner, 100 miler. They've never run 100 miles before. This is where I shine. This
Awesome.
is where I shine. So I started, we just started to really hustle. And then we spotted a female and
Awesome.
just took a deep breath. And I said, like, I want to make sure when we take this position, we take it and we keep it. And we did, and
That's
we
awesome.
said hi, wished them well, and then just like kept going. It felt like they tried to go with me a little bit, and then we turned onto single track, and I was like, we're gonna fly now. And we probably weren't actually flying, but it felt like we were, and I
Mentally,
was
it
just.
had to feel like it though, because I mean, you've pressed to get up to this point, you pass her now, and it had to feel mentally like you were absolutely flying.
It totally did. I felt I was putting so much space and time between us, and we were running in the dark at that point, and I don't know, I just feel like my body came alive and I felt really empowered. My calf was really bothering me. I had told Corey, this is going to be a limiting factor for me, so we need to see about getting Tylenol, which is a little bit better than ibuprofen.
Right.
So we cruised into mile 70, and he had already texted my crew, and I had Tylenol waiting for me with a cup of water, and that was the first thing I knocked back. And the first place woman, I hadn't caught her. She was about 30 minutes ahead of me at that
Okay.
point. And Celia picked me up, and the target from her assignment from before the race began was at mile 70, we go hunting.
Okay.
And we did, and we cruised. I mean, those miles melted away from mile 70 to 76. But at Pinnacle, we were still 30 minutes behind.
Wow.
So, and I didn't know that. She didn't tell me that until later.
Okay.
And after that, she was like, all right, now this is it. Like, you have to race now.
Nope.
And I was just like, oh my God, it's gonna hurt, just scared. And she's like, it's okay. It's gonna be all right. Because I was afraid I'd blow up.
Right.
And she had already shared a note from one of our trail partners and a couple of songs that, she was like, when it's time to go hunting, play these songs. So she'd already done that before. And then she played a voice note from two of my great girlfriends that just like brought tears to my eyes. And then it's just beautiful, uplifting song from my friend Laura, and just really helped me feel like I was on a run with my best girlfriends.
That's awesome.
And so that section all the way to Wormy's Pulpit, which she was like, I'm so excited about Wormy's Pulpit, because each aid station had a theme. There was a Bucky's theme, station. There was a speed track aid station, kind of to your point, because this is Talladega, baby.
That's right.
And so Wormy's pulpit, I mean, you can only imagine the theme. And
I'm trying to picture, are there apples or
I don't know. Well, there were like glow sticks hanging from trees, but that was about it. And
That's
it's
awesome.
and she was like, "That was such a disappointment, blah blah blah. I've been
That's
waiting all day for Wormy's pulpit."
awesome.
And then after Wormy's pulpit, it got so technical, and the trail would be super rocky, and it would wind out and in and out and in of the mountain, not only in but up. And I was
Wow.
like, "Oh my God, this trail sucks," But we were working, we were pushing hard, and so by the time we descended into Bull Gap, I think
Okay.
mile 87, I was 1 minute behind first
No,
place.
you had made up 29 minutes.
29 minutes.
Holy smokes.
So at that aid station, I did do a shoe change, which I know some of my crew was like, I think that's a waste of time, but my toes were aching. I had kicked rocks, I had stubbed my toes, my feet were aching, and I needed more space. I actually just lost my first toenail today. So,
There you go. Congratulations.
yeah.
Toenails are overrated anyway, so.
But yeah, I changed shoes, and those shoes felt so good. And my friend Bob Waters from Alabama was like, "First place just left 2 minutes ago." But there was all this shuffle of confusing information, and I thought leaving the aid station I was winning, and that she was
Okay.
still aid station. But then we got a phone call saying, "Nope, you're still chasing." And so it was 8 miles of rolling road, and my body just, I could not push beyond an
Wow.
11-minute pace. I would take like a 30-second walk break, and then come back to it, and I was still fueling. Not once did I have a stomach issue. Not once did I mean, Celia said eat, Celia said drink a sip of water, and like I was like, "Yes, ma'am, done, done, done." Like
Awesome.
it was in this section that my heart really just like cracked open, because she was just talking to me about her inspiration in me, and as a friend and a business owner and a community leader, and of course as a mother. And I just started to cry, and
Yeah.
we like cursed this man's name into the high heavens,
Good
just
for
like
you.
angry and just standing my ground on just whatever I could. And we finally reached the final aid station, not without a mild toddler temper tantrum beforehand, being like, "I'm gonna quit at mile 95 because this race is stupid." And where's the aid station?
I love that. I'm gonna quit at 95. I can't even picture you saying
I know. I just it,
that.
and she just laughed. At the last aid station, it came in. We did the waist. We switched my belt. We took the pack off. Just one of those things to take some weight off my back. And Celia was like, "Do you want your fairy wings? Because those were in my pack." And I was like, "You know what? Yeah,
That's
I do."
awesome. I'm so glad you put the fairy wings on.
I ran the last 5+ miles of this race with those fairy wings on. I did not turn the lights on until I felt it was time. And by that point, she had regained 9 to 10 minutes on me,
Okay.
and that was really discouraging. And I was just trying to run my own race at that point. I was just like accepting like this, that's just going to be really hard to close. And just trying to like finish as gracefully as I could. So we carried on, and my watch died, and I was frustrated about that. But Corey told me when we were about halfway, and then all of a sudden he was like, "No, I see headlamps."
No
And when
way.
we looked across the gully, and I felt like I was, those like mirrors that are on those hidden roads
Yeah,
sometimes.
yeah.
I felt like I was looking at one of those. And it was
That's
like, I was
crazy.
looking. Yeah, it was the most bizarre experience. And then I realized, oh my gosh, I see them. And so I didn't necessarily speed up, but I carried on.
Okay.
and did not walk again.
Awesome.
And the way that course was, it was just kind of like switch back and looping back and back and back and back. And I kept seeing her lights appear and reappear. And Corey was at mile 4.5. He was like, "All right, now, like, I think if you want to catch her, you've got to go." And again, like, just that fear of like, what if I blow up? Like, oh my
Right.
God, I'm at the freaking end of the race. Like, what's wrong with me? But I continued and I continued and I kind of felt, and I've always been this way. Like, I've always known, like, this is the moment where the kick comes. And I felt it well up inside. And I started to hear, the finish line. And then I could see the finish line and I could hear people cheering for her. And I was running as hard as I could. And I'm actually in her finish video. Like, one of my
Wow.
Zach got a video of her finishing, and you can see me coming through the trees. So I wasn't able to catch her in the end. I was 49 seconds behind her,
Wow.
but I almost had it. And I ran all the way through that finish line with those wings, and I had turned the lights on at 4.5,
That's awesome.
and yeah, just like carried the part of me that still exists despite all of the darkness that has tried to consume me this
Yeah,
past.
so proud of you, Nell. So incredibly proud of you for gritting through the horrible year you've had and then just laying it all on the line at Pinhoti, and you didn't come up short. You won the most important race, and that's the race of your self-confidence, the view of who you are as a human being, and you're a champ.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree with you in that regard. I feel it sends a message white, like, loud and clear that, like, you can take everything that I have. You can take my money, you can take my children, you can try to take my reputation, but you can't take what I choose to do, and I
Amen.
choose this.
Yeah. You've proven something beyond a shadow of a doubt. You are stronger than you think you are.
And just remembering too, like, at mile 30, it can feel so overwhelming to imagine going another 70 miles, and then you double that, and then you go another 10, and then you go another 5, and then you go another 3. And this past year has been an ultra of sorts,
Yeah.
never-ending ultra, and the stress of that has been exhausting. But and there been moments where I thought, I absolutely can't go on. I can't take another day. I'm just going to cease to exist. Not because I want to take my life, but because how can I go on another
Yeah.
day? And this is the ultra running life is one where you defy that voice telling you to quit. And that belief that you can't. You can, and it's hard, and it's not going to be easy, and it's going to be painful, and you probably aren't going to have fun, but you can.
Yeah.
And that's the reward at the end, is like, I did because I could, and I
Yes.
didn't know I could, and now I believe it.
Well, now you just summed up the whole reason that Living an Ultra Life podcasts exist.
Oh, you're so
Thank you.
welcome.
That was beautiful. Just the way you put that right there, not another word needs to be said. You're an incredible, incredible champion. I appreciate you persevering through all the hard times that you've gone through. I can't wait to see what God has in store for you in 2026.
Thank you. I believe that the best is yet to come. It's been hard to
Amen.
say this year. It's hard to say when you're in a dark, dark place. And sometimes the way you say it maybe doesn't sound like you believe it, but I do believe that great times are coming, not just for me, but for anyone who chooses to believe that on the good days and the hard ones.
Amen. Thank you, Nell, for persevering. Thank you for continuing to let your fairy light shine. And may your fairy wings always be with you at every finish line. And I can't wait to watch Magnum Opus Coaching absolutely explode because if people are looking for a running coach that knows how to get through the hard times, they couldn't choose better than you and your team.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much for having me again and hearing my story.
Thanks for listening. Really appreciate you guys. We'll see you next time on Living an Ultralight.